Ekia Kurniawan is a leading Indonesian writer, but it's taken a dozen years for his novel Beauty is a Wound to be translated into English. Now, this is a bawdy tale of a matriarch and her four daughters and their children. This is a little like the last story we were talking about in a way, because she's a famous prostitute who continues to hold sway even after her death. Along the way, this novel chronicles Indonesia's history from the end of Dutch colonisation through the Japanese occupation right up to independence, and it doesn't spare the horrors that occurred during this era, including the mass slaughter of up to a million alleged communists in 1965. Now, as you know, last week Indonesian authorities forced the organisers of the Ubud Writers and Readers Festival to cancel a number of sessions about this massacre, including a session that featured Ekia Kurniawan. Anissa Barrow asks him about his novel, Beauty is a Wound, asks him what it's all about.
It's a story about Dewi Ayu, a prostitute in Halimunda, a fictional town in Indonesia, in Java.
And I think Halimunda, from my reading, Halimunda is the land of fog.
Yeah, I think the fog is something metaphorical for ghostly town. He has three daughters, few beautiful daughters, and when she pregnant for the fourth time, he don't want this baby to be beautiful as other daughters.
Her three daughters are so beautiful, yeah. They cause so much trouble, don't they?
She want this fourth daughter as ugly as her nose, like an electric outlet.
A nose like an electric outlet.
With the skin as black as coal.
And she gets her wish, but she doesn't actually see the baby because she refuses to actually look at it.
Yeah, she named it as a beauty.
She's given all these daughters to this accursed world. Time has come for my funeral procession to pass on by, she says. And so she does. She dies. And then rises up 21 years later, and that's how the book opens.
One afternoon on a weekend in March, Dewi Ayu rose from her grave after being dead for 21 years. A shepherd boy, awakened from his nap under a frangipani tree, peed in his shorts and screamed, and his four sheep ran off haphazardly in between stones and wooden grave markers, as if a tiger had been thrown into their midst. It all started with a noise coming from an old gravesite with an unmarked tombstone covered in knee-high grass, but everybody knew it was Dewi Ayu's grave. She had passed away at 52, rose again after being dead for 21 years, and from that point forward, nobody knew exactly how to calculate her age.
I started the book as a ghost story, but then after 100, maybe more pages, I think I can write the book about metaphorical about Indonesian history from the last days of Dutch colonial and until the peak of Suharto era. But at the same time, how this epic story with a moral struggle and tragic end, but I want to narrate it with a gleefully and humor like Dalang used to do when he performs wayang.
So the wayang is the sort of puppet shows with the wooden shadow puppets, and they can go on all night, can't they?
Yeah, sometimes it's a few nights performance.
You've called this book, Beauty is a Wound, as a joke of a historical novel in a quixotic way. What do you mean by that?
I think the Indonesian history is full of violence and tragedy, but I think when I want to write them in a novel form, so I think we can criticism about this tragedy, this violence become more bearable for us to face. I think when I wrote the novel, I think there is a lot of historical novel in Indonesia, like the one wrote by, for example, Pramudia Anantatur.
Who's one of the greatest Indonesian novelists ever.
I think he is still the greatest Indonesian writer.
You've been compared to him.
I'm lucky to be half of him. I think I want to make another approach to Indonesian history. So when I read novel by Serfongto Don Quixote, I think I found the Don fit me to write this novel. I borrow from this Don Quixote novel.
Don Quixote.
Don Quixote. For example, how Don Quixote deal with reality and imagination combined to be this kind of historical joke for this novel. So I think the history is not exactly what about fact, but about what we believe it's happened.
The ghosts are very real. Dewi Ayu, for example, she has this ravenous appetite after rising from her grave after 21 years. You make mysticism and magic and ghosts very rational. Is that how you see them?
Yeah, I think this is the amazing part of Indonesian. In one side, there are Muslim communities, and there's a Muslim belief, but at the same time, the Hinduism or Buddhism faith is still alive, so they merge part of Indonesian lives. Indonesian people used to see everything as a kind of a destiny, kind of something inevitable. It will be happen, it happen. Like when the massacre 1965, there is a falling star. They believe it's something big will be happen in Indonesia.
So the falling star was a sort of an omen for the massacre. Yeah. There are so many colourful and finely drawn characters who develop over this large novel. There's Sudhanshu. Can you tell me about him?
Yeah, actually, Sudhanshu is based on real persons, you know. There is a military man named Supriyadi.
And he disappeared, didn't he?
Yeah, he's really famous, and he's disappeared. He's actually the first Indonesian army commander chosen by Sukarno, but I tried to retold about this man and to create why he was disappear. He's the another alternate of history.
And there was also a very interesting, and I guess he was, his arch enemy was Kliwon, the young boy who becomes a communist.
Yeah.
And they are after the same woman.
Kliwon is, I tried to make a joke about some friends in 1990s. When I was a student, we read too much Marxism and to build another new communist party, but it won't be happen in Indonesia like that. So I try to write about this kind of teenager who want to become a communist with a tragic way. But actually, there is another character Kliwon met when he was teenage, Comrade Salim. This is the based on the real communist leader in Indonesia too.
Yes, so Kliwon meets this Comrade Salim and he decides to give him a bit of a lecture.
Yeah.
Kliwon's mother is absolutely worried that her son's going to become a communist because the father was a communist and died in a terrible way. And she keeps making all of these comments like, "You mustn't become a communist. They're so gloomy."
This is actually a lecture, and maybe it's a propaganda a bit.
When the cock's crow was heard in the distance, their conversation trailed off as if they had begun to smell the odour of death. Comrade Salim was silent in his chair, as if he had died before his time had come. He didn't sleep. In fact, he was fully alert, waiting patiently for his last morning to begin. "Like the pious who believe they will get into heaven, I am a true communist and not afraid to die," he said in a quiet, almost inaudible voice. "Do you believe in God?" asked Kliwon tentatively. "That's irrelevant," Salim replied. "It's not man's job to think about whether God exists or not, especially when you know that right in front of your eyes, one person is stepping on another's neck." "So you are going to hell?" "I'd rather go to hell because I've spent my whole life trying to eliminate any man's superiority over other men." He continued, "If I might share my opinion, this world is hell and our task is to create our own heaven." His last morning came, and just as Comrade Salim had predicted, a Republican squad led by a captain suddenly appeared, coming to execute him. They came quietly, wearing civilian clothes, because Halimanda was in a KNIL-occupied area. The squad surrounded Salim while he was still sitting peacefully with Cleon on the veranda. "He wants to die naked, as pure as the day he was born," said Cleon. "That's impossible," said the captain. "Nobody wants to see his privates dangling everywhere, especially since he's a communist." "But it's his final request." "No way." "Well, if that's how you feel, then let's do it in the bathroom," said Cleon. "Let him stay naked. Maybe he wants to take a shit first, and then shoot him." "Communist number one dying in a bathroom," said the captain while shaking his head. "Now that's a great story for the history books."
And was that a story for the history books?
There's a story about Musso. Musso is one of Communist Party leaders. Basically, I borrow his story for Comrade Salim.
They rise up, these communists who've been killed. And they're almost like gnats. Sudancho has killed his fair share of them, and people swat at them, they shoot them. He gets plagued by them, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think the communist ghost is maybe metaphorical for 30 years. Indonesian is always afraid about communism. Everything they think of a dangerous thing, they label it as a communist. Even when I was a student, we went to street and reject the Suharto re-election, we all label as a communist. So communism is like a ghost for Indonesian. Even if it is not communism, they will call it communism.
Because a lot of journalists got caught up, and writers too, being labelled communists. Promoter Anna Tatua was banished to the island, Baru Island, as many of the characters here, or some of the characters here, are banished to that same island. But I wonder also, is there still that sort of ghost presence where Indonesian authorities, even Indonesian citizens perhaps, haven't come to terms with that massacre of, you know, they say up to a million people in 1965?
Yeah, even today they still talk about the dangers of communism.
You've said that literature is a dialogue, and you like to reach out to the world with this dialogue. What is the conversation you're having with this book?
Literature, all kind of literature, of course, is something we make a dialogue from generation to generation, from place to place, and from individual to individual. I think it's how our culture, our civilization is created in this world. Our memories, our history, our folklore is written because we will forget it. So for the first time, we try to start to make a dialogue about memories within ourselves. We as a present, and we maybe someday will read what we write, and we make a dialogue in different generation. So it grow up, become a dialogue about human to human, individual to individual, and nation to nation.
Well, I do hope that we get more of Indonesian literature on our shores translated into English.
I believe that it will be happen. Maybe there is a younger generation who I think more talented than me. So I think there will be their time to appear in outside Indonesia.
Do you think since democracy, since the Reformasi movement, do you think there's been a flowering of more literature, more music?
Yeah, of course there is more writers, there is more book, there is more publisher in Indonesia after the Reformation. For example, movie industry is grow up again. So there is a music, there is a fine art movement. I think democracy flourishes our culture again.
Yes, and there's so much to learn about Indonesia, isn't there? Our next-door neighbours, we really do need to know so much more about what's going on there. Indonesian author Eka Kurniawan speaking to Anita Barrow. His novel's called Beauty is a Wound, and the English translation of that is just now available. It's out from Text. And that conversation was recorded when Eka was in Australia for the Melbourne Writers' Festival. And thanks to Sian Pryor for doing those lovely readings. On RN, this is Books and Arts, a show all about darkness and light.